Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Football Social Daily. Your daily Premier League podcast.
For the second time this transfer window, Manchester United have got their man. Rafael Varane will follow Jadon Sancho through the doors of Old Trafford ahead of the new season for a miserly £34 million. The Real Madrid defender can boast a World Cup and four Champions Leagues on his CV and is still only 28 years old. Just how big a boost will that be ahead of the new campaign, and could it turn out to be a bargain? United may have got two of their main targets wrapped up early doors this transfer window, but across town at City, the blue half of Manchester are still slaving away to secure theirs. Clear interest from City in England pair Harry Kane and Jack Grealish, and it's the Aston Villa man who is edging ever closer to a switch to the Etihad, according to the latest reports. But can the two sides agree on a fee? Talking of duos, everyone else seems to be making additions to their squad, whereas we here at Football Social Daily are severely depleted. But fear not, joining me today, the ever-reliable Ian Brannan. How are you doing, Ian?
Yeah, no holidays here for me. But I didn't get in early enough to get the decent deal, you see, that's probably what it is.
Likewise, everyone else at Sport Social seems to have jetted off or driven off to the countryside or flown somewhere or at weddings and all sorts. And it's just me and you today. What's that song? Just the two of us, is it?
Just the two of us. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, that sometimes the more intimate affairs are the best.
So, Two is very much the running theme through today's podcast as well, because as I'm sure you've noticed, the Olympic Games in Tokyo is on right now, with the women's football tournament capturing the imagination, a truckload of goals over there in Japan. And there were two goals in Team GB's latest outing against Canada. The game finished one apiece, which means Great Britain are through to the quarterfinals of the Olympic women's football tournament. They'll play Australia on Friday. They were one down against Canada until very late on, when Caroline Weir's shot was deflected in for an own goal. That secured the 1-1 draw and passage to the quarters. And we are going to hear from Caroline later on today on Football Social Daily. The Manchester City player spoke to our own Jim Salverson on the Football Stories podcast not long ago about her journey in the game. So we'll hear what she has to say shortly. You can, of course, find the full episode 2 on the Sports Social Podcast Network. But let's kick off today's show with the big transfer news from overnight, and that is Manchester United have agreed an initial fee with Real Madrid for the transfer of Rafael Varane, £34 million. We've spoken about it a couple of times on the show, Ian, over the last few weeks since that interest first came to light. But United now have, all going well with medicals and visas and quarantines and all the rest of it, got their man. How good a move could this be, considering Varane's experience at just 28 and coming from an elite club like Real Madrid too?
It is a pretty good signing, I think you'd have to say. I know we were talking about it last week, and there was that rumour even in the papers, because we hinted at it, I think, last week, saying that Real Madrid have done this before, Real Madrid players have done this before, you know, offer themselves up to places like Man United, and it's actually just a ruse to feather their own nest at their current club, you know, contract negotiations and all that. Seems not to be the case this time. Looks like he's on his way over. He's got to go through quarantine and stuff yet, so he's not going to be able to undergo his medical. So stay tuned, folks, because there could be a twist in the tale yet. But let's assume it all does go through. 34 million for Real Madrid's one of their main centre backs. As you say, he's been with Real Madrid for I think 10 or 11 years now. Been part of that back four with back two really with Sergio Ramos right in the centre of defence, and so much experience. I mean, there's not a lot he hasn't won. He's won a World Cup. He's won Champions Leagues. He's won La Liga. He's done it all. Can't ask for any more. Gary Lineker summed it up saying it's a damn good signing, and I think that's that assuming it all goes to plan is brilliant. I mean, especially for the money as well. When you say about, I know we're going to mention about Harry Maguire being much more expensive than that. That price tag is quite something. But I suppose it's a reflection of where he is in his contract cycle at Real Madrid. You can't go bricking people for hundreds of millions if they haven't got a lot left on their contract. So good on Man United, good spot, good signing. Works for everybody, I think.
I think especially with how well Harry Maguire played during the Euros, to have someone of Varane's quality to come in, that's like a mouthwatering defensive partnership for the purists, I suppose you could say, because everyone knows that the reason people love football is for the goals, the entertainment, but the defence is such an important, crucial component in the Premier League because there is such an abundance of attacking quality. So to have two quality centre-halves like Maguire and now Varane, and for that price tag, like you say, Maguire costing 80 million, coming from Leicester, having not won a jot, and then you get Raphael Varane, who's the right side of 30, he's won a World Cup, multiple Champions Leagues, over 300 games for Real Madrid, and they've got him for £34 million, and the most they'll pay for him is 42, with all of the add-ons and all the extras that come with it, depending on what happens during his time at Old Trafford. It does look like very good business, and almost as if United can't go wrong, even if he's a flop, £34 million in today's market doesn't seem like very much at all.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed a ridiculous amount 15, 20 years ago, didn't it? But now we're sat here talking 34, even 42 million would be a bargain if that was the price. They've done pretty well there.
I mean, it kind of reminds me, Ian, and you'll know this as a Leeds fan, remember when Manchester United bought Rio Ferdinand off of Leeds? And at the time, that was like an eye-watering amount of money to take someone like Ferdinand, who was, albeit a very, very good player. And, you know, I suppose you could even translate that from back then to recent times where people are saying £80 million for Harry Maguire. But actually, United paid a similar fee, if you're looking at it relatively, for Rio Ferdinand from Leeds. And look how effective that signing was for them. Ferdinand became their sort of main centre-back for years and years.
Yeah, and Leeds paid a fortune for Rio Ferdinand in the first place, and that was the thing. Leeds smashed the transfer record at the time. Leeds paid 18 million quid, I think it was, for Rio Ferdinand, and it was like, what? I mean, that was the start of Leeds' downfall, let's be honest, you know, spending all this money that they'd earmarked for a stadium and spent it on Rio Ferdinand instead. But they did get a return on that one, not so much on Seth Johnson. Anyway, that's all in David O'Leary's book, I guess. But yeah, it is a staggering amount of money, but it is all relative to where the game is. You know, it's not like, well, you know, they should have shopped around a bit more and got the fee down. That's how much money is in the game at the moment. That's how much these players are worth to those clubs. The money is just insane now. It's not just all on gate receipts, as we know. The TV money is phenomenal, and it's not just TV money from this country. You've got separate TV deals around the world. You know, there's one for the UAE, for example, who are paying loads. China have got a separate TV deal pumping money in. So it's not just all on Sky or whatever. So this money is kicking around. It's market forces. That's what he's worth to those clubs. And, you know, the price is the price. We can't control that.
Exactly. I'm sure we'll come on to that when we talk about Grealish in a little bit as well.
Yeah, it is crackers. And it's going to be interesting to see how it goes for Man United this year, because there's been accusations in the past, probably at this sort of time of year, where fans are probably saying, we haven't signed anybody, look at all these other teams. I remember last year, of course, it was a slightly different year. The summer was much shorter and, you know, saying we haven't actually signed any decent players, blah, blah, blah. Of course, the Sancho thing was rumbling on this time last year. Didn't happen. And now this time, they've got Sancho, they've got Varane, and that's in addition to the players they've already got. And players, as you mentioned, like Harry Maguire, you'd argue his value will have increased, considering the sort of tournament he's had in the Euros. So, you know, they have got a much stronger team this year, and I think Man United fans should be fairly pleased. I was listening to the podcast last week, the one that I listened back to myself, and I was thinking I sound a little too glowing about Man United, so I'm going to have to keep an eye on that. But they have had a good summer, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we like to say this on Football Social Daily. We've been doing this podcast a few seasons now, and me and Jim and Marley, we kind of have this running joke about who's won the transfer window, and it always seems to be Everton, and then their players flop completely. I don't think it's going to be Everton this year, but in terms of a side so far, and as we've already mentioned, we are pretty early in the transfer window still. There's over a month to go until the window does shut. How are United doing in comparison to the rest of the Premier League? Obviously, we'll come on to City and their pursuit of Grealish and Kane shortly, which could completely change the landscape of transfers in the top flight. But as it stands right now, with Sancho and Varane, do you think United are winning the transfer window?
Yeah, because they've got these deals done, you know. And I think the other teams, it's very much rumour and talk. And there was, you know, a piece with Erling Haaland last night I saw on the news, and he was talking about, there's rumours about him and Chelsea, and he's been spotted having meetings and all this kind of stuff, and he's just poo-pooed it, saying, well, they're just rumours. And that's where we're at with the other transfers at the moment. It might happen, there might be stuff going on. There is a lot of stuff going on because players are coming back from holiday, things are starting to happen seriously. We know it gets left late in the summer transfer window. Gets left late to us sitting on the outside. I don't think it gets left late for the clubs. I think the players fully know exactly what's going on. And these things don't happen overnight. It's not like, well, sometimes they do, but more often than not, you know, there's you know what it's like when you're signing a contract for anything, you know, like buying a car, getting a new job. You know, it rumbles on for a couple of weeks before you're, you know, fully in a position to be sitting behind the desk or in the car or whatever it is. So it's the same with a footballer. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be sorted out, more than you realise. I think the paperwork, the agents, the insurance, the fitness tests, and as we've seen with Varane, you know, he's got to sit out quarantine first before he's even allowed to do his medical. So yeah, there's a lot of hoops to jump through, more than, I think, you know, people get used to playing FIFA and putting a bid in and waiting, pressing the button a couple of times, and then, whoop, there's the answer. You know, that's that, but that's not how it works at all. It'd be interesting to see what Man City do. Of course, they've got big rumours about, you know, Harry Kane and so on.
I think as it stands, I'm with you. United are winning the transfer window right now. But it's so early, isn't it, like you say? And in terms of getting their business done early, which is not a usual thing for Manchester United in recent seasons, you say about Sancho taking about a year. Bruno Fernandes took a similar amount of time. But look at the impact Bruno Fernandes has had. And if Sancho and Varane can have a similar impact to what Bruno has, I think that shows good signs for Manchester United. They've handed Ole Gunnar Solskjaer a new deal over the weekend as well. I mean, it seems significant that there is now support and backing being thrown behind Manchester United from above, which is something that was being questioned by fans and commentators and pundits alike throughout the course of last season, because there's always that question about Manchester United's ownership. Do you think we've seen a clear shift now in them supporting the manager and the playing squad and taking on board the concerns of the fans, which obviously boiled over last season with that game against Liverpool that got postponed when the fans broke into Old Trafford?
Yeah, I think there has been a big shift in the attitude at Man United in the upper echelons. I saw that the Glazers have offered to meet the fans once a year at one of the fans' forums or something like that. Which is a step forward, isn't it? Because the Glazers have been so mysterious in many respects. You know, fans haven't had the chance to address them directly about the club. They've offered to meet them once every 12 months, which I think, you know, fair enough. Okay, well, that's progress at least. And because they're going to be meeting with the fans, I suppose it's made them think about where they are. And maybe, I don't know, we'll find out in good time, but maybe this whole Super League thing has had a good impact in actually giving owners a kick up the backside and making them realise actually what it is that they're owning, and that it is not a normal business. It is something that means more than that to many of the fans of the club, particularly those that have been sponsored, you know, that are fans, you know, not like your glory fans who follow them just because they're winning. You know, there are a lot of Man United fans around the world that Man United is extremely special to them, and in the same way that any club is special to any football fan, whoever that might be. And maybe they undervalued that. And so it's made them think. They do seem to be a lot more approachable. They do seem to be thinking, right, okay, we get it. You know, you want a team that's going to win. All right, let's have a team that's going to win then. Whereas before, they were looking for a team that was maybe going to win at the bank, you know, bringing in a lot of money, a lot of revenue, all that kind of stuff. They've got many ways to make more cash of the Glazers. And, you know, it's all part of a business empire for them. Maybe they're getting the point, because there just seem to be a shift in certainly bringing in some big signings and being more approachable, perhaps.
And as we say, a new deal for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer over the weekend as well. So I think that just goes to show the support that they are throwing behind the manager, who did get them to a cup final last season. Of course, they lost on penalties to Villarreal and then, of course, finished second in the Premier League. They want to get closer to Manchester City, and we'll be talking about their crosstown rivals next in the transfer rumour wrap here on Football Social Daily. Welcome back to the podcast. This is Football Social Daily from Sports Social. If you're new around here, why not hit subscribe? That way you won't miss an episode again. We're currently 3 podcasts a week until the start of the new Premier League season. And when the season does kick off on the 13th of August, we'll be back to daily podcasts for you. And when we say daily, we really mean it. 7 days a week with match previews, match reports. You can find all the information on our website, sport-social.co.uk as well. We are the only podcast that will do that for you. Cover the Premier League 7 days a week in podcast form. So as I say, if you like what you hear, why not hit subscribe? And that way you won't miss an episode again. But for now, it is pre-season, and that means the transfer window is open. And we're going to take a look at some of the biggest rumours doing the rounds over the last couple of days in the English top flight. And Jack Grealish is on the agenda again. Yes, we're talking about the Aston Villa man once more. This comes from the Daily Mail, who say City are preparing a £75 million offer to sign Jack Grealish. Aston Villa, meanwhile, allegedly want £100 million. Sam Lee from The Athletic and a regular Football Social Daily pundit says things are at an advanced stage. Jack Gorn of the Daily Mail, who is another pundit on the show and a good friend of the podcast, he suggested that City are confident that this Jack Grealish deal is close to being completed. This is an interesting one for me, Ian, because like what you mentioned earlier on in the show, it feels like this is a case of he's worth more to Villa than a price tag could ever justify. But on the whole, from the outside looking in, you'll get a chunk of supporters of City and other clubs that say, well, Villa are deluded if they want £200 million for Grealish. But I suppose it isn't those fans and other clubs that set the value. It's Aston Villa that set the value and of how valuable they feel he is to their club.
Yeah, I mean, he's Aston Villa's player. And I think sometimes you get these clubs, bigger clubs, or certainly fans of bigger clubs, whoever they are, the ones with the, you know, with the big pockets and that, who think, well, there's a player there that we quite like. You know, he will come to us because we've got the cash. Sometimes there's more to it than that. You know, does Jack Grealish want to move? Number one, does he want to move? Not just to a football club. Does he want to move house? You know, does he want to move his life? There's other considerations sometimes. And I think you get to the point where you've got so much money that Jack Grealish is a multimillionaire already that, you know, there's only so much money you can spend. And I think money to the public sometimes it means more than it does to footballers, because I think there's more to it than that. There's the chances he's going to get to play. You know, if you're going to be in an all-star lineup, you know, you get that that sort of Real Madrid situation almost, where you've got too many good players in a team. Is he going to be playing every week? You know, what's the guarantee on that? And, you know, Aston Villa, like it or not, are wanting to build themselves up the table. And this is the unfortunate truth for many of these teams, is that there are clubs around, as we've seen, Leicester have already done it in having success. And what are Leicester? They're a well-run club. There's a family atmosphere. They look after their players. Everybody loves playing for them. Same for Aston Villa. You know, they're building something there. The people enjoy working there, playing there, being part of it. And, you know, do they want to reward that love that's been shown to them so far by saying, up yours, I'm going to go play for Man City? No. Because they know
Villa,
that
and Grealish, you know, is a Villa fan, isn't he, through
yeah,
and through.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. And it's the same, and same for Leeds. You know, loads of rumours about Calvin Phillips. Calvin Phillips is going here, Calvin Phillips is going there. Calvin Phillips ain't going anywhere.
Well, Calvin Phillips was subject to a 20-odd million pound bid when Leeds were in the Championship, and he said no to stay with Leeds.
Yeah, to go to Villa. Yeah.
I think it was double his wages, a significant price tag, and he said, no, I'm all right, thanks. I'm good at Leeds. So you do get a bit of loyalty in football. There is a saying, that, isn't there, that there's no loyalty in football. But there are. We are starting to see more evidence of that now, aren't we?
Yeah, as I say, because once you've got so much money in the bank, right, you don't need... there's only so much you can spend. So all of those things about money and blah, blah, blah and all that. But if you are at a club that is decent and looks after you and it's a nice place to be, you're in a nice squad, you've got all your mates there, your family's there, why would you want to be anywhere else? And that's certainly the thinking at Leeds, is that, you know, why do you want to go over there? Why do you want to go over to Dark Side, right? Other side of Ill. To achieve that, if we're building something here that you could achieve here, like it or not, right? Because it's not about how much money you've got, it's about how many games you win. And we've seen that having an expensive squad or having a player that costs 80 or 90 million pounds doesn't mean that you're going to win matches, because there's more to it than that. It's about a team, you know, and that team togetherness and that will to win and having a good leader. That is what is important as much as the money and how much you spend on players.
And I want to go back to what you said just a few minutes ago about the game time for Jack Grealish. Now, I think Jack Grealish is a starter for Manchester City if he goes there. But do you think there could be an element of what we've seen at Chelsea kind of under the radar, with the fact that they spent significant money on Timo Werner, they spent significant money on Kai Havertz, and it almost feels like they're obliged to play those players because of the price tag they paid for them. I don't think Pep Guardiola quite has that mindset when it comes to his players, regardless of what they cost. I think he'll be playing them if he thinks they're right. However, when you spend a significant amount of money, and if they do end up paying 100 million for Grealish and the same amount for Kane, that's a lot of money, the most that City have ever spent on players. So you feel like you're going to get flack if you don't play them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you get flack probably from shareholders, depending on the club. You probably get flack from fans saying we've spent all this money on a player. And if that player isn't playing well, then really it should be the coach, whoever that is, or the manager, what you want to call them, should be their decision as to who plays and how long they play for. And as we saw in the Euros, Jack Grealish, brilliant player, but, you know, he was used sparingly, wasn't he? And is he the all-round player? He's a very creative player, and he's going to get bums off on seats and bums off seats, I suppose, as well. But do you know what I mean? That there's certain types of game that you don't want Jack Grealish necessarily involved in. As we saw with England, you know, where he came on for 20 minutes and got taken off again, because there's clearly defensive doubts about him. I don't know. It's a tricky one. It is a tricky one. And I think when you're in a team with a lot of other talent, I don't know. Is his star going to struggle to shine quite as brightly as it does amongst Aston Villa? And I think he's had a great tournament at the Euros, by the way. I mean, just anecdotally, on the Riviera that is the beach at Sunderland, you know, I've seen a few Grealish England shirts, which I've never seen before. There was even a kid walk past my house, a kid must have been about 7 or 8, with an Alice band in his hair. So, you know, the Grealish effect is there, definitely.
And I also think that he's such a laid-back character, Jack Grealish. I genuinely think he's one of these people that doesn't listen to the outside noise, doesn't get affected by the pressure. You know, when players say, I'm just enjoying my football, I genuinely believe that when Jack Grealish says it, because he certainly plays with that demeanour and that style. So, according to reports, City are confident that this one is getting closer and closer. It's gone a little bit quiet on the Harry Kane front, but certainly City's two key targets, Grealish and Kane, and they haven't got either of them just yet. Over a month ago at the transfer window. Talking of Manchester City, their opponents in the 2019 Champions League were Tottenham Hotspur, and a key component to that Tottenham side that reached the final in defeating Manchester City on their way there was Toby Alderweireld, who's now left Spurs after 6 years. 32 years old, he's made a move to go and play in Qatar, Ian. How crucial has he been for Tottenham over the years, and how big a blow is it?
Yeah, I mean, he has been a key part. I mean, he's certainly been a key squad player, hasn't he? And he's you know, been involved in everything that Tottenham have been involved in over that time. And I don't know if he leaves as a Tottenham legend as such, would you say? But he's certainly been there for quite a while, as you say, 6 years. And he has played some key you know, some key moments. I to be honest, I'm not the closest watcher of Tottenham, so I can't list off these three greatest moments in a Tottenham shirt off the top of my head. But I know that he was well loved by the Tottenham, you know, the Tottenham faithful, and they've done some big stuff in that time, haven't they? You know, Champions League and all that kind of stuff. You know,
exactly that. In terms of his importance to the team, you have to say that a couple of years ago, when Tottenham were genuinely in contention at a period for the Premier League and they reached the Champions League final, Toby Alderweireld was a key component to that. And he was linked with moves away right throughout his tenure at Tottenham because he's put in consistent performances over 6 years. I can barely remember a time where he was in bad form. And I think that's reflected in the national team as well. Belgium, number one team ranked by FIFA, obviously had a disappointing Euros. They would have hoped to go all the way. But certainly in terms of how he's performed in the time that he's had at Tottenham, those 6 years, consistent with Tottenham Hotspur, linked with moves to clubs like Manchester United on multiple occasions, you have to suggest that he's done a pretty good job there. I'm quite surprised that he's moved to Qatar at just 32 and hasn't fancied carrying on in Europe, but obviously we know that there's plenty of money out there in the Middle East. They've paid just £13 million for him from Tottenham. And actually for a 32-year-old and what they paid for him, I think for the value that they've got out of him, that's not the worst deal in the world for Tottenham Hotspur. But what does it mean now? Because the core of Spurs that I mentioned over the last few years, that Champions League team, the one that was making a tilt for the Premier League at times, has now seen Alderweireld leave, Danny Rose is gone, Eric Lamela's left this summer, Christian Eriksen went last season or a couple of seasons ago, and possibly Harry Kane could even go in the next month or so. Heung-min Son signed a new deal, which is positive, but in terms of facing a possible rebuild, does Nuno Espirito Santo, as the new manager, face one already on his hands, do you think?
Yeah, and another one who's gone, Jan Vertonghen, who was the, you know, defensive partnership with Alderweireld. You know, and I'm just looking back at, you know, his best moments, and yeah, the Champions League final, getting to the Champions League final, grounding out the results to make it there alongside Jan Vertonghen. That was probably his, you know, his best season there in 2019. And so yeah, they've changed really the entire spine of their team, especially if you know, if Kane goes as well. It is all change, isn't it? They are going to have to get people in for sure, because as you know, you listed off the players there that have left, and it is all change. But they've not had much stability either, have they, Tottenham? With, in case of the manager, you know, you had the Mourinho era, and then now we're in this Espirito Santo era, and we know that he's a good manager, but you're not going to solve all the problems overnight. Christian Romero is rumoured to be coming in to replace Alderweireld, and they're negotiating about that now. Atalanta is where he's at the moment in Italy. So they've got a few names on the table, but again, we're in that situation where it's all rumour at the minute, and that's not very good for, you know, your pre-season and all that, is it? It's kind of like you can't really fully prepare for what's coming up. We're only, what, 3-4 weeks away from the start of the season, and they've got probably 4 or 5 players still to come in who don't know how they're expected to play for Tottenham yet. And so it surely makes it difficult for the rest of the squad. And that's where you end up with these wobbles at the start of the season, isn't it? Which can be costly come the reckoning at the end.
It feels a little bit piecemeal at times from Tottenham Hotspur. I don't know whether that's a bit of an overreaction from me, but in terms of the way they're restructuring things, it does feel like, you know, getting rid of the core of that team that did so well, that there's almost a regeneration on the cards. And they tried to do that with Jose Mourinho and it didn't work, although they did get to a cup final last season. They were soundly beaten in the end by Manchester City. It just feels like a real difficult time for Tottenham Hotspur. And I just wonder what the fans' expectations are for next season. Is it optimism under Nuno Espirito Santo? They should be aiming for the top four with how they've performed in recent seasons, but they were some way off it last season. It just makes me wonder what the actual blueprint is and what the plan is for next season. The plan for Spurs every season should be to win a trophy, because that monkey will always be on their back until they do win one. But it just makes me wonder what would be considered a good finish in the Premier League next season, particularly with the way the squad is shaping up now. How important is it that they replace not just Alderweireld well, but those other players that have gone, replace them well? Because they have brought in signings, but we haven't seen the best of them. I mean, Son now, for me, is head and shoulders Tottenham's best player. And they've hung their hat on him. He signed a new long-term deal. He's going to be there into his 30s. And for me, I think that's a good bit of business by Tottenham, tying Son Heung-min down to a new contract. But in terms of replacing Alderweireld, and if Kane leaves, etc., etc., you know, I mean, I forgot Kane was even at the club then when I was talking about Son. Obviously, Kane's their best player, and then it's Son. But, I mean, I'm of the opinion that Kane's leaving this summer. So, in terms of the replacements they make, it's crucial that they get them right, because they could end up in a similar situation to their North London rivals, Arsenal, who have just not got it right over the last however many years, and they found themselves 8th or 9th last season.
Yeah, but this is what it comes down to, like we were saying before, about there's more to it than just throwing money at players. There has to be something to do with what's going on in the background at Tottenham, because they've had great players, they've had Champions League winning managers, and yet they always seem to fall short. And why is that? What is going wrong in the background at Tottenham, I would say? There must be something somewhere. There must be something. I think it's in the culture. There's pressure on them from somewhere. I don't know. Can't put my finger on it. But it does seem that there is something in the water that's affecting the success, because they've got everything else, haven't they? They've got an amazing stadium. They've had the squad. They've had players that have left Tottenham and gone on to win Champions Leagues with Real Madrid and things like that. So it's not for the lack of talent, but what there is some that X factor, that thing that binds it all together, is missing. And maybe that is the culture within the club. Maybe it is not, they're not all together for some reason. When that comes down from the board or what, I don't know. But it's just that missing magic isn't there for them. And this sale of Alderweireld, by the way, is I'm just looking on, you know, some of the Tottenham supporters boards. They're not happy. They are not happy. This has not done much to sort of build relations between the board and the supporters.
Is a £1 billion stadium the best stadium in the world, and living in London, is that enough of an attraction now to bring people to Tottenham? To play in the Premier League obviously is a great attraction. Tottenham are one of the biggest clubs in the country, no denying that. But they don't have a manager in Jose Mourinho like they did before, where they could possibly attract players, much like Everton did with Ancelotti, where they had a top quality manager who is almost a pull in himself. But the fact that now players are leaving and Tottenham aren't at the same level as they were even just a couple of years ago, do you think that is enough to start attracting players?
I think London is an attraction, because everybody knows where London is. And you know, the things that there are in London. I mean, London's bloody expensive. You need to be a footballer to be able to afford to live there in the first place. Mm. Tottenham, though, are not... I don't know. I'm just surmising my own thought process. If you were going to move to London, would Tottenham be the first football club you think of when you think of London? And for me, when I think of London, I think Arsenal, I think Chelsea.
Yeah.
I don't think Tottenham straight away.
You're going to get pelters on social media now.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, I know of Tottenham, but if I was somebody in Madrid, or this guy that the, you know, Romero...
Do you think that's because Arsenal and Chelsea have been successful and Tottenham haven't? Do you think it boils down to as simple as that?
Yes, because when you're on the TV more, winning stuff, that's what makes you famous. And having a nice stadium, you see it at the start of the match and you see it during the match, but you don't, you know, having a nice stadium is not going to look great on your mantelpiece afterwards. You know, when it's dusty medals and stuff like that they want. I've told you the story of the time I went to Steve McLaren's
house. I'm
not
sure, but I want to hear it again, even if you haven't. Even if you already have, sorry.
Just what happens to winner's medals, right? So just a quick aside. I was doing some work for a major national BBC broadcaster with a Digit 5 involved. And my job was to go to Steve McLaren's house to basically mic him up for a show. So I'm in Steve McLaren's house. And he goes off, he says, "Do you want a glass of water?" So he goes off to get a glass of water for us, and it was an outstanding glass of water, I've got to say. It had ice in it and everything. And then while I'm sat there, I'm looking at this mantelpiece, slightly dusty mantelpiece, and there's some like medals on there, the sort of medals that you might win at a, you know, like a school sports day or something like that. So I'm looking and it's like Premier League winner's medal, Eredivisie League winner's medal, all these winning, you know, FA Cup winner's medal and all this kind of stuff. It's like,
just
blimey.
Dusty on his mantle.
Just tossed on the side like you would have, like you'd ram in an old drawer. So that's what happens to these winners' medals. But it shows that, you know, they are the thing, they're the mementos of your time. Anyway, that's completely unrelated because no Spurs player is going to have to worry about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think Tottenham players would love a dusty medal. Doesn't matter how old it is, I think they'd enjoy it, to be fair. As you say, Spurs want Cristian Romero, the Argentina centre-half, currently playing for Atalanta, so we'll keep a close eye on that one. I do think Nuno Espirito Santo has got plenty of work to do. That's it for the transfer rumours for today's Football Social Daily. We're going to take a short break and then we're going to be talking to Team GB and Manchester City player Caroline Weir, who scored a really important goal earlier this week for Team GB in the Olympic Games in Tokyo. Great Britain in the women's soccer will take on Australia on Friday. We'll hear from Caroline Weir, who's been speaking to Jim next on Football Social Daily. Welcome back to Football Social Daily, your daily Premier League podcast from Sports Social. As we've already mentioned, just three shows a week for the time being, but not long now until we're back to a full schedule of 7 days a week. So hit subscribe, and that way when the season does restart again in just a couple of weeks from now, you'll be bang up to date with all the latest goings on in the English Premier League. There's a new episode of the podcast every single day of the top flight season, so looking forward to that restarting again. In the meantime, whilst everyone's taking in pre-season friendlies and looking at transfers, there is some football going on over in Japan at the Olympic Games. Team GB are involved in the women's soccer tournament, and Manchester City player Caroline Weir is part of that squad that's made the trip over to Tokyo. Team GB are in the quarterfinals of the competition. They play Australia on Friday, and it was Caroline Weir's late deflected strike which earned a draw against Canada, which was enough for GB to secure passage through to the quarterfinals. They'll be hoping to get a medal, but before Caroline Weir did jet out to Japan, she spoke to our very own Jim Salverson in the latest series of our Football Stories podcast on the Sports Social Podcast Network. There's two series available, so go and check it out on the network. All you need to do is head over to the website, sport-social.co.uk, and hit the podcast tab. Loads of great shows over there, or just find it wherever you get your podcasts. Some really interesting chats with former youth team players that were released at an early age from a Premier League club, insights into mental health, coaches, referees, some of the lesser told stories, let's just say, in the world of football. Go and check that out, but not before we listen to Caroline Weir, who's chatted with Jim.
I want to take you back, if it's okay, to the very beginning of your footballing career. And I'm interested to know what it's like growing up as a girl who wants to play football at a high level. Was it easy to find clubs? Was it easy to find people to play against? Was it easy to find those opportunities?
No, not really for me. Growing up in a small town in Scotland, I love football since I was about 3 or 4. I was playing it in the back garden with my siblings, and I joined the boys team when I was 5 because there was no other girls teams around. The opportunity for girls to play football was so limited. It's changed now, but you know, 20 years ago, it wasn't like that. So straight into the boys team. I played in the school team full of boys, only girl in all of these teams. But I was quite lucky when I was 10. I moved to Hibs in Scotland, which had a really, at the time, it was the best kind of youth girls set up. They had an under 13s, 15s, 17s team. So yeah, I went there at 10. Obviously, I was pretty young and made my way through the Hibs kind of academy. It wasn't really an academy at that point, but there was a pathway there for girls that wanted to kind of keep playing football. But yeah, it was tricky. I was lucky because Hibs was great and I was there until I was 18. But in terms of role models, female role models, I didn't have any. I would like to say I did, but I was obsessed with football. I watched so much football on TV, men's football. And I'm not quite sure where it came from that I decided that I was going to be a professional footballer, because, you know, I didn't see women doing it. I just probably thought I was going to play men's football or, you know, whatever that looked like. I didn't really know. So I was fortunate because when I turned 18, I went down south to Arsenal, and that was when the game kind of begun to turn professional. So yeah, that was kind of my upbringing, and there was definitely a lack of role models and lack of opportunities for girls football, but I was fortunate in that I could go to Hibs.
We're talking about maybe a decade passing now since those kind of early days at Hibs and Arsenal. Do you think much changed in the sport in that respect, in terms of access to the game and being able to have those role models for young players to look up to?
Yeah, I think we've seen a massive shift in momentum in women's football over there, I'd say the last decade, even 5 years. I think it's come such a long way. You know, I never thought I'd be sat at City in the environment that I'm in, doing what I love every single day, being pushed to reach my potential. And I think that's come from all sorts of things, you know, more media attention, being more visible, women's games being on TV, the national teams doing well, obviously in this country, England doing well at World Cups and Olympics and Euros, all that kind of thing. So I just think that really helps because it encourages more girls to play and shows us there are opportunities out there. But it's a continuous cycle. It needs to keep going. And things like the BBC and the Sky TV deal this season for the WSL is huge because it brings a whole new level of coverage that we've never seen before. And hopefully, again, we'll kind of elevate the game to a new level.
Obviously, it's not just an access and awareness issue that faces women's football at the moment. There's also, at times, maybe a bit of a lack of respect, certainly from the men's side of the game or fans of the men's side of the game. We've seen recently Alex Scott's appointment as a female pundit on Football Focus being labelled as box-ticking. We've seen Karen Carney as a pundit getting abuse for daring to have an opinion that probably a male pundit would get away with. Does it feel like there's a real uphill struggle to be had in terms of that side of the game, in terms of being able to kind of change opinions from a certain portion of the footballing fan base? Or is that something that just feels unachievable and it's just a case of like not bothering with that side of things?
I think there's a small minority that you're never going to change the minds of, that, you know, it's a male space and women aren't welcome, which is fine. We're not going to change that. But I think on the whole that there's many people's perceptions we can change about women's football. I think as well what gets forgotten is women's football was banned, you know, for 50 years, not so long ago. So we are playing catch up on and off the pitch. So I think for women coming into Alex Scott, who's leading the way and doing such a good job on the punditry side and paving the way, as is Karen Carney and people like that. It takes time for people to get used to seeing women talk about football, have opinions about football and know what they're actually talking about. And as well, you know, women weren't playing football for as long. So the game itself has come a long way on the pitch, physically, technically, because we've become professional. But like I say, we've been playing catch up and it does take time. So I think it's on a good path, but it is going to take a little bit longer for it to be normalized and for it to be accepted by everyone, or most people anyway. But I think it's doable. I do just think it's going to take quite a bit of time.
Do you think we'll ever get to a point where both sides of the game are seen on an equal footing in the ways they are? I mean, you look at clubs like Lewes FC on the South Coast, who have equal pay for the men's and women's teams. There's a few international teams like England and Brazil that have adopted that as well as something going forward. Do you think we'll ever see that in the Premier League?
I think it's an interesting argument. I think, like I say, the women's game has a long way to go. I think the men's game is like no other, not even, you know, in the world of sport. It just moves at such a fast pace in terms of financially. So I think when we start comparing the men's and women's game, it's not a great argument. I think for now, they've got to stand separately just because of the fact that women haven't been playing football for so long. And it's a different game. And I think the women's game, instead of being compared to the men's game, should just be celebrated for what's, you know, unique about that and what it can bring to the world of sport, to society and things like that. So yeah, I'm not sure we're going to see the same levels financially as the Premier League. probably not my career, hopefully my lifetime at some point. But like I say, the Premier League men's football is kind of in a league of its own in that sense. So I think it's just about keeping the women's game sustainable and accessible. And like I say, I think it's on a good path.
Caroline, pleasure talking to you. Good luck for next season at Manchester City.
Thank you.
That's it for today's Football Social Daily. Don't forget you can catch that full episode with Caroline Weir on Football Stories on the Sports Social Podcast Network. Just go to sport-social.co.uk, click the podcast tab, and there's plenty of different shows for you to get stuck into, including two series worth of Football Stories, and also the official British Speedway podcast, No Breaks, No Fear, hosted by our very own Ian. New episode out already, Ian.
Yeah, one every week, every Tuesday there's a new one, a big one this week. The lineup has been announced for the British final, which takes place on the 16th of August. Hear about who makes the cut for that. It's happening in Manchester, by the way, the National Speedway Stadium. You should get yourself down there if you can, because literally the best British riders will be fighting it out for a trophy. But we're also joined by Great Britain, Sheffield and Scunthorpe star Adam Ellis throughout the whole episode, and he gives some great insight on what it's like trying to be an international speedway rider flitting between different countries every week in the current climate.
Yeah, can't be easy, but the British Speedway podcast No Breaks, No Fear is an easy listen, so head over to the Sports Social Podcast Network or anywhere you get your podcast to check out that. But that's it for today's show. Thanks very much, Ian. I've been Niall. Don't forget to hit subscribe, that way you won't miss an episode of Football Social Daily again, and we'll catch you in a couple of days time.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.